This is the Great Post Office Trial, Episode 9, Extremely Aggressive Litigation.
This is the true story of a national scandal. It's the story of how a much-loved British institution abused its power, betrayed our trust, and shattered the lives of hundreds of ordinary people. And it's also the story of how a group of victims fought back against seemingly insurmountable odds.
Here it was, in black and white, from a person in authority saying, "You're right, and what happened was not okay."
My name is Nick Wallace. I'm a journalist who's been following the Post Office Horizon scandal for more than a decade, ever since hearing the story of Seema Misra, a woman who'd been jailed while pregnant for a crime she was adamant she didn't commit.
I didn't have the courage to step into the court. I was speaking to so many others, saying, "No, that's fine, we will be there, but I didn't have the courage.
She was sentenced to 15 months in prison. Her life was torn apart. Hundreds of other people suffered a similar fate to Seema's. They lost their livelihoods, their homes, and their good names. For more than a decade, the Post Office pursued and prosecuted postmasters for false accounting and theft. They fired hundreds more. Now it was time for the reckoning. More than 500 sub-postmasters were fighting back, led by Alan Bates, founder of the Justice for Sub-Postmasters Alliance. They were suing at the High Court. It was a massive risk, and it was the sub-postmasters' last chance. If they lost the case or ran out of money and had to fold, they'd be losing for good. The case would take its name from the lead claimant who'd started it all. Bates versus Post Office was on.
I thought, yes, we've achieved one of our goals, which was to get Post Office in court.
Just before the first trial began, the Post Office attempted to have key evidence from the claimants struck out.
They'd made that application before they'd even seen our witness statements, which was quite extraordinary. But that's an application we had to fight.
James Hartley was the postmaster's lead solicitor.
So they knew that the more they argued points really hard, generating additional costs, the more pressure they would put the claimants under.
The managing judge appeared to be the right man for the job. Sir Peter Fraser heads up the Construction and Technology Division at the High Court. He's a former Royal Marine and a regular Ironman competitor. He's known in legal circles as the Iron Judge. Independent investigator Ron Warmington.
His ability to worm out the truth from a pack of lies in a written witness statement is uncanny.
There was no escape from him. He was all over it.
Joe Hamilton, sub-postmaster from South Warmborough. She'd been one of the original members of the JFSA and had played a crucial role through the years as a friend and confidant to countless sub-postmasters who'd joined the fight. She came to court every day she could afford to.
It was the first time, I think, that the post office has actually been put on the back foot. At last, someone who's bigger than post office can actually make them disclose stuff in court and tell the truth.
This was going to be a bitter battle. Early on, the judge castigated both sides for what he called
extremely aggressive litigation tactics.
On top of this, Sir Peter noted the Post Office was attempting to restrict evidence for what he suspected were public relations reasons. In a pre-trial judgment, he huffed,
"Whether this generates adverse publicity for the defendant is not a concern of the court, as long as the evidence is properly admissible, which I've found it is. The court is not a marketing or PR department for any litigant."
Notwithstanding Sir Peter's considerable judicial authority, he was powerless to stop the ruinous expense of the bare-knuckle fight playing out in the case. Before the first trial in this epic litigation had even begun, the warring parties had racked up 10 million quid between them in legal costs. The state-owned post office had deep coffers, while the sub-postmasters were dependent on their funders holding their nerve. Because of the size and complexity of the case, it was broken up into chunks. On the 7th of November 2018, in Court 26 of the High Court's Rolls Building, the first trial in the Bates versus Post Office group litigation began. This opening battle chiefly concerned the nature of the contracts between the sub-postmasters and the post office. Alan Bates, naturally, was the first witness.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wish I hadn't been first, but I suppose someone's got to be first. I'd never been in a court before, like, and to sit through something like that, and in the witness stand as well. But, I mean, I had no idea what I was going to be asked or what I was going to be questioned about or where it was going to go. And you want to try and be helpful as much as you can because you're talking to the judge, not to the cross-examiner. It's quite a daunting experience, and I'd prefer to have done seen a few other people in there first from choice. But as I say, someone had to go first, yeah.
As the trial progressed, brutal revelations about the post office were spilling out in open court. In just a few days, we discovered that the post office's own help desk had told one witness to adjust her branch accounts, a practice which had seen many sub-postmasters prosecuted for false accounting. And we learned in 2010, a serious Horizon IT error had been kept from sub-postmasters. And the proposed methods for fixing the bug involved remotely accessing branch accounts in exactly the way the post office had insisted was impossible for years afterwards.
I mean, I do think you have to be in the room to feel what's going on. And there were massive days in there that were just awesome.
3 months after the first trial finished, the judgment was handed down.
I didn't realise just how good the judgment was because nobody had said anything.
Kathleen Donnelly was one of the postmaster's barristers.
We saw a draft copy. It's fair to say we were absolutely ecstatic.
Well, I knew by the press vans outside that something must be good.
And here it was, in black and white, from a person in authority saying, you're right, this is what went on, and what happened was not okay.
It does appear to me that the post office in particular has resisted timely resolution of this group litigation whenever it can.
To stay stony-faced and maintain the confidence in that draft judgment, that was difficult, you know. But one of the moments that I really remember from that day was Jo Hamilton actually getting her paper copy of the 300-odd pages of that judgment.
It wasn't until Kathleen Donnelly, she came over to me and she said to me, I don't think you realise just what you've got in your arms. She said, in my career, I've never seen a judgment as good as that.
These submissions by the post office are bold, pay no attention to the actual evidence and seem to have their origin in a parallel world.
I could see the expression on her face thinking, where do I start and what does it mean? And I remember going over to her and saying, you know, we won it.
And she said, you know, it is damning.
There seems to be a culture of secrecy and excessive confidentiality generally within the post office.
And I cried, and then the others cried. We all had tears.
There were many hugs.
Yeah, what an emotional time. It was incredible.
The judgment was a watershed. Key contract terms which had been held over the sub-postmasters for years had been ruled so unfair as to be unenforceable. As other journalists scrambled to get their statements from the sub-postmasters and their legal team in the now slightly chaotic courtroom, I corralled Alan Bates outside, where he gave his first broadcast interview in 10 years.
Well, first of all, that's a pretty hefty judgment you're holding in your arms there.
Oh, stunning. Absolutely delighted. We couldn't be happier for the whole group. I mean, we've all been working for this for years, but now we're actually there. I'm so pleased with it.
I know you haven't had long to go through the judgment. Are there any things that you would particularly pick out as being significant to you?
Oh, the culture of secrecy that Post Office has and how they stonewall everybody, not just ourselves, but also the MPs over the years. There's an awful lot of truth in this document in there. And as it comes out over the following weeks, I think people will be shocked to hear what's been going on.
Is this a turning point?
It is a turning point because we've now actually had something through the courts that the courts agreed with us about what we've done. And we'll just carry on with that as the cases progress.
But despite the sub-postmaster's stunning victory, it was only one trial. In a case so complicated that five were eventually penciled in. There was a long way to go, and trial two was the blockbuster. A forensic examination of the post office's infamous computer system, Horizon. Was it or wasn't it fit for purpose? The court heard evidence that the post office's IT system was flawed and vulnerable. It was a huge, unwieldy show that needed to be kept on the road by an army of technicians at Fujitsu, the IT firm which operated Horizon on the post office's behalf. The postmaster's star witness was former Fujitsu engineer and whistleblower Richard Roll, who suffered a merciless cross-examination from the post office's barrister.
Well, before it started, I was as nervous as hell. It went on all afternoon, and then I had to go to bed that night, and then the next day, you're back in the witness stand, and you just think, oh my God, I've got to go through all this again. So when it all finished, I just went outside and I just cried. And then a couple of the postmistresses came out, and they were in tears, and they gave me a hug. And that was sort of when I first realised that actually what I've been saying must have been quite important. And here was someone from inside standing up and saying that this is what it was. And all the time before that, it had been denied. It was good. Very warm moment.
Kathleen Donnelly again.
So he did have specific recollections about remote access. So that was the ability of Fujitsu employees who were not in the sub-postmaster's branch to access sub-postmaster's records and potentially change them. By the point we arrived at that Horizon Issues trial, they had, to an extent, admitted it could happen. The only issue was how frequently. And without him, I just don't think we would have got those concessions.
Suddenly, right in the middle of the Horizon trial, after 2 weeks of damning evidence, the post office brought proceedings to a juddering halt. What was it like?
We thought it was absolutely unbelievable.
It told us that the other side were, in a sense, desperate.
Sensationally, the post office demanded that Mr. Justice Fraser recuse or remove himself from the trial, accusing him of apparent bias. Forensic accountant and JFSA advisor, Kaylin L.
I just think it's such a dangerous thing to do, and therefore the only grounds to my logical brain as to why you would do that is to delay things or run up costs for the other party, both of which were achieved.
The judge was forced to temporarily abandon the trial while he dealt with the post office's application.
Recusal really was jaw-dropping, I thought. A recusal application in itself is so rare, they really took exception to the first judgment. But it appeared to us that it was just a tactic to try and derail the trial and stop the managing judge from continuing to hear it.
In a statement to this programme, the post office described the allegation that they'd tried to slow down the litigation and run up costs as a mischaracterisation. During the trial, the post office's next move was to apply to the Court of Appeal to have the first trial judgment reversed. If their appeal was successful and they got Sir Peter Fraser booted off the litigation, the post office might just snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. Thankfully for the sub-postmasters, the post office's recusal application failed, miserably. The judge refused to recuse himself, a decision the Court of Appeal backed definitively. And the application to appeal the first trial judgment was batted away by Lord Justice Coulson, who criticised the post office for acting like a mid-Victorian factory owner. The Horizon trial was resumed. Mr. Justice Fraser announced he'd hand his judgment down in December, and the lawyers got to work in preparing for the third trial. As Alan Bates and the postmasters anxiously awaited the Horizon trial judgment, there was another bombshell.
That episode of The Great Post Office Trial was produced by Robert Nicholson and presented by Nick Wallace. Story editing from Alexis Hood, sound design from Emma Barnaby, and mixing from Tom Brignall. The executive producers were Will Yates and David Prest. Next on The Great Post Office Trial, what the hell had happened?